Joe Gibbs Racing driver Denny Hamlin began the 2020 NASCAR Cup Series season by winning the Daytona 500 in February. Last night, Hamlin picked up his second win of the season by winning a caution-filled and rain-shortened Toyota 500 at the Darlington Raceway in South Carolina. The race was shortened by 20 laps by rain, and just before the rain fell, Kyle Busch spun Chase Elliott while racing for the second spot. Busch would end up second, while Elliott was scored with a 38th place finish. See the full results at MRN.com. Racing continues today in Darlington with the NASCAR Xfinity Series Toyota 200 at 12 noon Eastern here on MRN. The race was rained out this past Tuesday. I'm Kyle Rickey. This is NASCAR Today Midday on the Motor Racing Network.
And you know the NASCAR is back when you have either somebody throwing a helmet at a car going by or somebody yelling and screaming and cursing or flipping someone off. And last night, we got the latter. So, yes, NASCAR is back, even without fans. Chase Elliott not happy with Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch admitting after the race that he made a mistake. Well, he's human. That's cool that he admits he made a mistake. Chase Elliott was hot and bothered, and I have to say, I think he's either practiced. He has a very distinct flipping the bird
he was ready
way of doing
sure.
things. Yeah, no doubt. That was very, very, very solid performance there on the bird flipping there
yes.
by Chase Elliott. Well
I
done.
I would actually be watching when it happened, and I'm like, wow. I wonder how this is going to go. I said, he's just not going to, he's fine. He's going to get out of his car. He's just not going to leave right away. And he didn't.
No, not at all. So, there you have it. Denny Hamlin won the race, as you heard earlier, shortened due to rain. So we at least have some sports to talk about a little bit in regards to actual activity, per se. Local senior spotlight, Dusty.
Yes, today we continue on with our NCASSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Senior Athlete Spotlight. And today we feature Smith Center Redmond Seniors and Lady Red Senior Colton Shoemaker and Bree Freeling. Colton Shoemaker concluded his sports career with a strong finish at the 3-2-1A state wrestling meet in late February. 3-1 at the tournament, he finished second place at the 120-pound weight class. On the season, he went 35-11 for the Redmen, and that came on the heels of finishing third place last year at 113 pounds for Smith Center. He was also a key player for the 12-1 Redmen football team, which finished as a state runner-up in 2019. Second on the team with 898 yards and 12 touchdowns rushing. He also had 89 tackles on defense, third best on the team, and added 8 tackles for loss and interception, a second-team All-MCL running back and honorable mention defensive back. Bree Freeling with a great senior season for Smith Center as well. In the fall, she helped lead the Lady Red to the 2A state tournament in volleyball as they finished with a record of 34-7 on the season. Freeling led the team with over 400 assists as a setter, added a team-high 50 aces, and had over 230 kills, averaging just under 3 per set. Also added more than 80 blocks. She was a first-team All-MCL volleyball pick and also voted second-team All-State by the Kansas Volleyball Association. On the basketball court, averaged 10 points, 7 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and 2 steals a game for the 11-9 Lady Red. MCL recognized her as an honorable mention all-league pick in basketball. She also excelled in track and field during her career. She was a 2A state champion in the pole vault as a sophomore in 2018 and finished as a 2A runner-up in that event in 2017 and 2019. Also brought home an 8th place medal in the 2A long jump in 2018. So Bree Freeling with an outstanding career there, as well as Colton Shoemaker for Smith Center, our Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete Spotlight for our Senior Athlete Spotlight. If you missed that or you want to look back at our past Senior Athlete Spotlights, click on the Athletes of the Week tab at ncksports.com.
All right. Well done by both. Okay. The NCAA Council has voted to lift a moratorium on athletic-related activities for 3 major sports. They voted on that yesterday. We predicted that they would go ahead and approve it. The vote allows for voluntary athletic activities for football and men's and women's basketball to run through the month of June. The Wednesday vote comes as states across the country are lifting their own shelter-in-place restrictions amid the global COVID-19 outbreak that halted all sports more than 2 months ago. This was set to expire on May 31st. According to the council chair, we encourage each school to use its own discretion to make the best decisions possible for football and basketball student-athletes within the appropriate resocialization framework. Allowing for voluntary athletics activity acknowledges that reopening our campuses will be an individual decision but should be based on advice from medical experts. The vote paves the way for schools and conferences to allow athletes back on campus for workouts. SEC presidents are scheduled to vote Friday on whether to open their schools to athletic-related activities on June 1st. The MAC will also hold a similar vote on Friday. Big 12 presidents met via phone on Monday, but no decision was made.
Big 12 making some news yesterday saying that we need to be started by mid-July to be able to have really normal football season. So that's basically, what are we talking here, about 7 weeks away?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it makes sense. I get what they're saying there. Do we think the SEC presidents will vote no on Friday?
No.
Exactly. I would be surprised if they say no. Because they're losing money, so forth and so on. We talked about the finances of everything, and we've already seen some colleges have to cut some sports. We saw D2 cut back the schedule, which is, you know, would D1 cut back the schedule? I think if they forced to, but there's so much money that is out there and all this money that some, you know, colleges have already lost. I mean, the revenue from the NCAA tournament, so forth and so on. You know, they're going to try to get as many things in as they can.
So I think D1's more apt to try to find people to replace if certain people can't go different places, like, and try to fill it and find other people that can come in just to make that extra money if they can.
Speaking of money, this just makes me laugh. The Oakland Athletics have not paid their rent to use the Ring Central Coliseum, according to the interim executive director of the stadium. Henry Gardner told the Bay Area News Group on Tuesday that the team had informed the stadium authority it could not pay the $1.2 million annual rent that was due April 1st, citing the coronavirus pandemic. They said because they haven't used it, they were not able to generate revenue and they have no ability to pay. We recognize that we've all been upended in a number of ways. Maybe there are some things we're willing to negotiate and waive, but we just can't say no rent. According to a letter from the A's sent March 31st and obtained by the Bay Area News Group, the team cited something in their contract. It covers extraordinary events, such as a pandemic, as a reason for not sending the rent payment. A's General Counsel DeLorna Ellis wrote that the team would defer payment until we have a better understanding of when the Coliseum will be available for our use. Of course, the MLB season has not started, and at some point they hope so soon. Okay. So what this is, like, I saw another headline, and this is why headlines are very deceiving. The headline said, well, it wasn't necessarily deceiving, but it said, the A's don't pay their rent. So you're immediately going, and they cited because of COVID-19.
Yeah.
So you're immediately going, they don't have $1.2 million to pay their rent, even with the COVID-19, then how do they pay their players?
Yeah.
Or, you know, they don't have to yet, technically. But,
well, yeah.
But it's like, seriously? Your owners are billionaires. Every owner is pretty much a billionaire now in professional sports. So then what you see here is they're trying to exercise a clause in their contract to avoid paying that rent for $1.2 million. So there's a little bit more to the story when you look at it a little bit deeper. But still, you know, it's like, really, can't you just pay the $1.2? I mean, you should be all right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not my money, so.
Yeah, if it's in there, it's in there. If you can use the clause, I guess use it.
And defer payment.
Yeah.
Makes sense because
you
unknown.
Until you actually use it, then.
Because you don't know when the season's going to start.
Yeah,
that does make sense.
Yeah.
But when you see the initial headline.
But it's like, this is a professional sports team. They've got $1.2 million.
Oh, yeah. They've got it in there.
It's just like, we could avoid all that.
Got it in their coffee can. This is a story Riley's writing on 24/7 Sports, ESPN, others have grabbed it as well. This is interesting. Stephen F. Austin University faces a series of penalties, including the vacating of games for a lack of institutional control violation level 1 involving the erroneous certification of 82 student athletes in 9 sports over the past decade. On Tuesday, the NCAA announced an eventual postseason ban for the school's baseball, men's basketball, and football programs, all which were included in the Wednesday's release due to an insufficient academic progress rate. With the latest reprimand, the school must return 50% of revenue, more than $60,000, from the 2016 NCAA tournament when the basketball program was led by current Illinois coach Brad Underwood, who of course used to be an assistant under Frank Martin at K-State, and vacate any games that included ineligible athletes. Other penalties include a 2.5% reduction in football scholarships, a 5% reduction in baseball scholarships, which can be assessed this season or next season, plus 3 years probation. The NCAA said the school's violations largely stem from the certification of transfer students who had not fulfilled progress toward degree requirements. The report said the university relied on a former academics director to assess the academic eligibility of its athletes without including the university's academics or compliance personnel. The university and the NCAA used the negotiated resolution process because they agreed on the violations. So they admit something happened there. The violations occurred across multiple sports from 2013 through 2019, the same range that will be applied when the university vacates games. So they went over West Virginia NCAA Tournament 16. Didn't happen, apparently. Of course, we all know it did.
Yes.
Whatever, whatever. The university was found to lack institutional control because it did not adequately monitor and control the athletics eligibility certification process, failed to properly apply academic certification rules, and did not involve staff members from outside of athletic certification process, according to the NCAA's release. And the school apparently feels like this is the less of the punishment, and they've agreed to it from what we read here in this story.
Yeah. Sounds like the definition of lack of institutional control.
It does. It does.
Like, I don't know, do these coaches know what was going on? You know, it's kind of like, what?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
For 6 years.
For that scale across that many sports,
over
you know?
Over the course of 6 years and all those sports, 82 ineligible athletes. You know, I've seen people, and your first reaction when I see it is, okay, they slam the little guy, and then the big guy gets away with murder. But in this case, if you really read the story and you look at it, I mean, there should be some harsh punishment for 82 ineligible athletes competing over the course of 6 to 7 years. I mean, you know, come on. That should be probably pretty significant. But there are certain examples over time where the little guy has gotten some kind of penalty. But if you're Duke or Kansas or Kentucky or Alabama, you get a slap on the wrist. Or if you're North Carolina, you get nothing after academic fraud. So I understand where people are starting to right away. They go, okay, little guy gets, okay, they went in and beat Duke and now they're on probation. But there is a lot more to it than just the headline, once again.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's okay to read the story.
Yeah.
It's okay. It does seem pretty harsh, though.
It is crazy. But, well, and it's, you know, it's an institution that has a lot of people that are going to stick around. Like, transfer of credits doesn't really do much at KU and Duke and all that stuff.
No.
Because if you're a freshman, as long as you're eligible on that standard to get into college, all that other stuff's not going to come into effect for a lot of those bigger universities.
Speaking of Brad Underwood, he's making a lot of money at Illinois. Sources say that Arkansas, Illinois, Cincinnati, and K-State will headline the 2021 Hall of Fame Classic at Kansas City, which means K-State could be playing Brad Underwood.
Yeah.
And playing Illinois.
Let's do it.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Unless Brad Underwood gets fired at Illinois because they find out that he knew all about this stuff at Stephen F. Austin, or would there anything happen to Brad Underwood?
I don't think anything will happen.
Probably wouldn't, no matter what.
It's not. Right. He didn't. He can put it on the athletic department and say, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I bet he'd be fine.
I always hate these things, no matter what the school is, because it's always the kids coming in, they're part of the program, and the new, and not usually not the same coach that have to deal with these probations and lack of scholarships. It doesn't seem quite fair, but it is what it is. Game 4 of the World Series was last night on Fox Sports Kansas City. I have to admit, of all the games in the World Series, Game 4 is the one I kind of forget a little bit. Because Game 1, I remember because of Gordon's home run, extra innings. That one's vivid. Escobar, first pitch, inside the park homer, plus I was there. Game 2, I remember because Cueto was so awesome. And then Game 3, I remember Ventura didn't pitch well, and so what? And then Game 4, I was covering state volleyball.
Uh-huh.
And I was in a hotel room in Emporia. Because I remember where I was for game four. So this, maybe that's why I don't remember as much, because I wasn't at home watching it. But I remember watching the game going, the Royals better win this game.
Yeah.
Even though they're up 2-1, it was Chris Young on the hill against Steven Matz, who, I mean, that's an advantage, Matz, at the time. And I'm like, well, what's Chris Young having the tank after throwing three innings the other night, you know, game one? And I was really nervous about game four. I really was. And the Royals were down again. And they're down 3-2, and they're going into the eighth inning, and things don't look great. And then all of a sudden, Zobrist gets a walk. And then Kane is down 0-2. He gets a walk. And that set the stage. Here's some of the highlights from Game 4 of the World Series 2015. The Royals rallying to win 5-3 to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the series. These are good memories if you're a Royals fan.
Joe Gibbs Racing Drive.
Let me try this one.
Chopper on the infield, can't turn toe, Murphy boots it, in to score is the tying run, Zobrist, and this game is 3-3 in the eighth. That's to the right side, and the Royals take the lead. In to score is Kane, and going first to third is Hosmer. Moustakas has put Kansas City on top 4-3. To pitch now to Perez. That's into right field. That ball's going to get down. Another run scores. That's Hosmer going to third is Moustakas. It's 5-3. Broken bat. That is caught. Going at the back is Cespedes, and the game is over. Yoenis Cespedes just took off, and he's doubled off on the soft line drive, and now the Royals are one win away from a World Series championship.
It's amazing how quickly things change. The great part about watching these is you know the result, yeah. And it's fun to watch the Mets fans all excited when they got out of the seventh, and then the eighth inning, and then the horror of it all when the ball goes under Daniel Murphy's glove. And I have to admit, I for some reason think that that happened during Game 5, but it was Game 4 when he did that. Of course, there's more to things in Game 5. Was, you know, defensive problems like Duda's throw and Hosmer's mad dash to home, which that's going to be tonight on Fox Sports Kansas City. Game 5, the Royals clinching that one. And that, of course, is one everybody remembers because the Royals were down 2-1. Matt Harvey stayed in, and Terry Collins probably should have pulled him and so forth and so on. But, you know, I'm watching this game last night, and I didn't watch the whole thing again, but I watched the last, the most exciting part towards the end. And a few things that I remember Murphy's error. I just got mixed up as to what game. And that opened the floodgate, no doubt. But the walk before it by Kane, when he was down 0-2. I mean, Clipper should have finished him. But as Tom Verducci said, and I, you know, it's fun going back and listening to Buck and Reynolds and Verducci. I thought they did a really good job. And Reynolds is pretty good. And Verducci accurately pointed out, he said, you've got a closer that's ready in the bullpen. You got a right-handed batter in Lorenzo Kane. Why would you allow the lead runner to reach base? So he was saying, why would you allow the tying run to get the second base? Why not bring in Familia to face Kane if you're going to bring him in the eighth inning anyway? And he waited one batter too long. Kane got the walk and then the error by Murphy, and it opened up the floodgates. Whereas Ned Yost, he didn't mess around. Went to the bottom of the eighth inning. What did he do? He started Wade Davis and went two innings.
Yeah.
And Familia, you know, he could have done the same thing. Started the eighth, went two innings. Yeah. So Terry Collins either didn't trust Familia to go a full two, whereas Ned Yost said, I'm going my horse. And Ned Yost outmanaged Terry Collins just in that move alone.
Yeah.
And, of course, Collins messed up by keeping Harvey in, although I understand that one more when a guy's pleading to go back out there. I mean, if I was, I probably would have done the same thing. I might have pulled Harvey one batter sooner the next game, which we'll talk more about that tomorrow morning. But, you know, that stood out to me. You know, Wade Davis, two innings. And then the one thing I forgot about was, you know, Davis breezed through the eighth. And then the ninth inning, there's one out. And then runners at first and second. So you got the tying run at first and the winning run at home. And Lucas Duda is at the plate.
Yeah.
And Lucas Duda hits a broken bat, little flare to Moustakas. And I forgot about Cespedes.
Oh, that's the one thing I remember from that game out of everything.
See, I forgot that because... Because I'm like, what in the world? He was the trail runner, and he had to have thought there were two outs, I guess.
He had to have.
I mean, how do you do that? And in a moment like that, I mean, so, you know, you think about Game 4. I mean, the Royals won the game, and they put the ball in play, and you got to give credit to Zobrist and Kane getting walks, and you got to give credit to Chris Young keeping them in it after four innings, and the Royals bullpen did its job. But the Mets handed that game to the Royals
because,
first of all, the error by Murphy – you know, that changes everything. And we don't know. Maybe the Royals, you know, the Royals would have had what would have been a runner at second with two outs, I think. So they had a runner in scoring position, get a base hit, you tie the game. But they don't score three in that inning, more than likely. And so then you go to the first and second with one out, even though Moose catches the ball, Cespedes is actually thinking straight. There's two outs with runners at first and second, and Davis still has to get the next guy.
Yeah.
Now, I still think the Royals win the game. Because first and second, two outs, Wade Davis, I mean, he worked out of a bases loaded, huge jam in the ALCS, of course, just the week prior in the ninth inning. But still, the Mets just, those were two just really horrible plays. Murphy's was a physical play that happens. But the Cespedes one is inexcusable.
Yeah. I just remember.
He had a bad series. He kicked the ball around on the inside of the Parker in game one. I mean, Cespedes did not have a good series. And Daniel Murphy, if you remember, he was the talk of the town in New York. He was hitting homer after homer during the whole playoff series against the Cubs and everybody. And then he went bye-bye. The Royals shut him down.
Yeah.
They're pitching.
You talk about not – because I was covering state volleyball earlier that day in Hayes, and I went to see my uncle who was in the hospital and went out to eat with my cousin. We didn't get back until late, but we got right back to the farm right at the time all that good stuff was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember watching that at the end of the game. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, what? I turned to my dad. I was like, what the H is he doing? Like, why did he leave?
This is one of those where TV didn't do it justice. And it's not.
Oh, no, absolutely
it's not. It's not a knock on Joe Buck or the announcers at all. This is why being at the game is better than than watching on TV in this instance, because you don't have any idea. You can't see on the TV screen because they're looking at the third baseman fielding the ball, which is Moustakas clearly. And then he throws the first. You're like, oh, whatever. You know, the guy's going to get back. And you're like, oh, my God, where's Cespedes at? If you would have a full shot and you're like at the stadium, you would have been like right away. You'd be like, what's Cespedes doing? I mean, can you imagine Met fans? What in the flying bleep is he doing? What? Yeah. Can you imagine? This would be like Chris Getz doing something stupid on the base paths, which he did, remember?
Yeah.
I mean, coming in as a pinch runner and getting picked off at first. Gerard Dyson did that before.
Yeah.
Terrence Gore's there before. And Chris Getz did it, and he wasn't even fast. But I was like, what? I'm glad I wasn't a Mets fan. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my gosh. it was a flare to Moustakas. I'm like, all right, two down. And then he throws the first. Like, what just happened?
Yeah. That was the same way, because I saw him making that quick move to throw to first, and I'm like, did he leave?
Yeah.
He sure did.
I thought was, what's Moose
halfway
doing?
Up the baseline, and I'm like, what?
What
you just lost the whole game by doing that. I mean, you understand what I say when I say that.
Right.
You still have a chance. Stay on first.
You blew any chance of
either thought there was two outs or you thought it was going to clear, and you don't go until
there's
it clears.
No way. I mean, how could he think that was going to clear?
I know. Yeah. I mean, those are the only two explanations, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
I agree.
And neither one of them makes sense.
And then you're the trail runner, so you're supposed to read the runner in front of you on top of it all.
Yeah,
too, so.
Exactly.
It was just horrible base running. So the Royals got some breaks, and no doubt they did in Game 4. They won last night. That was a replay on Fox Sports Kansas City. The other thing that I'd forgot about, and I remember now in Game 1, we got stuff on social media about Edison Volquez's dad passing away, and Volquez didn't know it well. He's pitching in Game 1 and pitched well, and then he went for the funeral and everything in Dominican, and then he came back for Game 5. So that's what you're going to see tonight. Volquez, everybody talks about Matt Harvey, how great he was, and then he stayed in too long because Terry Collins left him in too long. But overlooked in that whole thing was Edison Volquez matching Harvey for the most part and keeping the Royals in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was good again, and after he lost his dad. So that'll be tonight, Royals Game 5 on Fox Sports Kansas City, as the Royals will, I'm going to spoil the party for you. They're going to close it tonight. Hosmer's going to do something crazy, wild, and cool. Bulls Game 6. I didn't even know anything about this movie until yesterday.
I didn't either. I didn't know about it until you're talking about it right now.
Really?
I wasn't watching ESPN last night.
I haven't watched much TV lately. Behind-the-scenes footage they were showing, it was different angles. Like, they had Bob Costas play-by-play NBC, but they had different angles, and sometimes you had, like, audio and video of the huddle for the Bulls.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was kind of neat. I didn't watch the entire thing, but I taped it, so I'm going to go back and watch it. But one of the things that really stands out to me from what I watched the last part of the fourth quarter of that movie, and then, of course, the trophy celebration, the trophy presentation. Knowing what we all know now after The Last Dance and over the years since, and that was 22 years ago.
Yeah.
You talk about awkward. I mean, Almad Rashad is the guy interviewing.
Yeah.
And he, of course, knows what's going on because he's buddies with Jordan.
Yeah.
And so he interviews Jerry Reinsdorf first, and he asks him very quickly, like, hey, are you going to bring the guys back for another run? And Reinsdorf says, you know, we would love to have Pippen and Michael back, so forth and so on, blah, blah, blah. And then he talks to Krause. And Krause, of course, dodges the question completely and then goes on about other stuff and way to go Jazz, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, my gosh, we all know what they were going to plan on doing. Now we can tell how bad of liars they are.
Yeah.
And Reinsdorf kind of was a liar. And somehow he gets painted to be a lot better than he is. And then Krause was, you know, he just dodged the question like you should. Why lie and make yourself worse? I mean, so Krause dodged it. And then, you know, they ask Phil, and Phil goes, I'm going to politely dodge that question, Ahmad, which was funny, you know. But Ahmad asked the question he had to ask of everybody. I give him credit. And then, of course, he asks Jordan, and Jordan goes, I would love to do that. I don't remember him saying that, but he said, I would love to do that, you know, because Ahmad says coming back for a seventh. So maybe Jordan all along was going to come back for a seventh. I still don't think I'm convinced he was going to, but it was forced because of the whole thing, as we talked about before. But it is interesting, you know, right after the thing, you know, Jordan could have easily said, I don't know, we'll think about this, blah, blah. But he said, I'd love to come back. So that was interesting because that was the toughest championship they had to win. It was the last one, of course, and that was the focus of The Last Dance. But that trophy ceremony, that was a little awkward. And it was weird knowing what we know to see Reinsdorf and Krause and Jackson and Jordan and Pippen say what all they said. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's it's always fun to go back and see some of that stuff when you know what happened after it.
Like we're talking about the Royals.
What are they talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Here's another thing I want to get to, and then we'll get to our replay real quick. Who do you think were the players that had the biggest offseason losers for the Chiefs? Now we're talking players that are still on the team but are losers because of the moves the Chiefs made or the picks they made in the draft. Can you think of somebody right off the bat that's maybe a loser in this deal?
One of the running backs.
Less playing time, so forth, so on. I think Damien Williams could be a loser.
Damien Williams is what I was going to say.
I think Darrell Williams is a loser.
For sure, I think he's a loser.
I think so. But here's one that I've thought about, too, when they brought in Taco Charlton. Breland Speaks. He was out all last year. The Chiefs traded up to draft him. I
forget about him because he didn't play.
Right now, he's basically a bust, no doubt. But they got Passano, who played better last year. Got Frank Clark, Okafor's back. Charlton, they picked up. If he ends up being any decent, I think Speaks might be not even on this team.
Yeah.
So that'll end up meaning that Brett Veach made a mistake on that one. Dorian O'Daniel, I mean, is he even going to make the roster?
Yeah.
I think he's vulnerable there, and I kind of liked him initially. And
he's
in regards...
He's kind of been a special teams guy for the most part now.
Right.
You know, he had to play a little bit toward the end, not last year, but the year before that.
Right.
But...
And then at guard, Tardif, Wiley, and then maybe even Austin Ryder at center, which I like. The Chiefs brought in some competition. There's another Darrell Williams that just signed offensive lineman. There's a Lucas Niang, who they drafted third round. Mike Rimmers, they can move all around. Yasser Durant's an undrafted free agent that was the best one out there, according to some. And then a healthy Martinez Rankin. Remember, he got tore up his leg when against the Titans. There are a lot of options there for the Chiefs. And then there's Allegretti that's still a guy that could push for some time, perhaps. So, you know, we talk about the Chiefs a little bit concerned on the offensive line, but they actually addressed it. You know, they have quite a bit of depth there, or at least some guys that push. And then, of course, as we said, Damien Williams, who I don't think he's going to be hurt horribly early in the year, but I think by late in the year, his playing time is going to go down. But here's the thing, though. You know, he didn't play a ton last year because of injuries, this and that, split time of McCoy and other running backs. I mean, Spencer Ware even came in for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when it came to the biggest games in the postseason, he stepped up and he was great. So I wouldn't write off Damien Williams to say that he isn't going to do much. And it's going to be the Clyde Edwards-Helaire show his rookie year. I do think by the end of the year, Helaire is going to get more of the carries, I believe. But I think Damien Williams could still have a big role in this team.
For sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, he stepped up when Kareem Hunt was released and did some good things even that year in the playoffs.
Right.
And I think he's probably been maybe one of the most disrespected guys that the Chiefs have had over this run.
Mm-hmm. You know, I agree.
Because he just comes
he
in.
He could have won the MVP, performs. Like you said.
He comes in and performs. Yeah. And you could tell he was on Jimmy Kimmel not long after that, and I watched after the Super Bowl, and you could kind of tell that he felt disrespected, and understood that, and wanted to let people know that he means more to this team than what people think, and I agree with him, you know, because he just seems to step up in the most important spots and do good things.
He did it the year before when Hunt was gone. Yeah, didn't do a great job filling in for Hunt during the regular season, but boy, in the playoffs, he picked it up. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Everybody was excited about McCoy, and then, you know, Damien Williams was better than McCoy, so McCoy wasn't on the active roster during the playoffs.
A lot of people thought McCoy would win the job and get the brunt of the carries. That's what I thought. And
I
was
too.
Wrong. So Damien Williams, he's been a great pickup for the Chiefs, no doubt, but going into the final year of his contract, he's got motivation, no doubt.
Yes.
To get maybe a big deal, possibly, if he has a great year again this year. But if he does less carries, is that going to affect his value? We shall see.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's a complete loser in this situation because he's still going to play. I would agree with you. Darrell Williams.
Because when they kept signing all these running backs, I'm like, how's Darrell Williams?
Or the Washington kid they got from Oakland that played with Mahomes at Texas Tech as a free agent. Maybe he
one of those,
they picked him
up. I don't think they're going to get rid of Darwin Thompson.
I don't either.
He did some decent things, even special teams-wise, too.
Right.
He's developing still.
Right. That's how those guys are going to make the team. If they're going to keep all those guys, they're going to play special teams.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got for our replay today?
Yeah, today we're not going too far back, just to January, to the regular season game between Austin.
But
Osmond
that does feel like 2 years ago.
It does. You think about it, it was what, 5 months ago, and you're
oh, goodness.
That feels like it was a year at least.
It really does.
But it was the first challenge that Osborne had on the boys' side this season, really the first real test that they had, and they passed it, but not real easily, as you're going to hear here. They had to make a couple comebacks during the game and win in overtime. Osborne St. John's Tipton boys regular season game from just this season. So I hope everybody enjoys today's comeback replay.
Before I hit the button to play that, I want to let everybody know we got our lineup ready to go for next week. Next week's going to be College Pro Week on the Sports Ticket, and it'll begin on Tuesday because Monday is Memorial Day, so a shorter week. But how about this? Tuesday, the play-by-play voice of the K-State Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, will be with us to talk K-State sports. That's Tuesday at 9:30 on the Sports Ticket. Wednesday, May 27th, Kansas City Chiefs will talk Chiefs football with Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest. He knows his Chiefs stuff. Trust me on that. And then Thursday, May 28th, will be KU Sports. And Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, will join us to talk about KU athletics. And then Friday, May 29th, a week from tomorrow, the voice of the Kansas City Royals, Ron LaFever, just texted me and confirmed that he is good to go to be on our show next Friday at 9:30. So next week, College Pro Week. So if you're a K-State fan, Chiefs fan, KU fan, Royals fan, three of those four are play-by-play voices, and the other knows the Chiefs about as well as anybody.
Yes.
Outside of the guys in the booth, and that's Matthew Derrick. So it should be a great week. And then in the month of June, at least the first 3 weeks, we're going to go back and replay some of the classics. We're talking any ball game, any sport that we've done over the last 15, 16 years or whatever it's been, the classics that we've had. Dusty and I picked some out, and we have had a lot of fun listening to those. And yes, so we're going to play those in June for you. So we've still got some plans, even though there isn't a lot of sports happening. But by the time we get through those classics, by the late June, just maybe things are going to get back to a little bit more normal.
Up. Getting pretty close to starting baseball. We'll cross our fingers.
If not, we'll start discussing who is the fourth best Kansas City Royal of all time.
Welcome back on Comeback Week here on Play-by-Play Rewind on Katy Country 94 Sports Ticket. And we're joined by Jamie Walters, the head coach of the Osborne Bulldog boys basketball team. We're heading back not too long ago this season, Osborne and St. John's Tipton game in the regular season there on January 12th in Beloit, where this was a tight game. Osborne actually trailed 35-28 in the third quarter, came back to tie it, but then trailed by six again in the fourth quarter. And there was a scenario there where it was 52-46 St. John's Tipton, and there was a little exchange of buckets for each team.
Out top, Dayton Lynch, open three, top of the key, nothing but the bottom for Dayton Lynch. He stepped up big against Thunder Ridge. He has his first three of this game, 52-49. St. John's Tipton's lead is down to three again. Pollard drive, stuffing it home on the right wing line. Cody Pollard with 21. 54-49. Blue Jays with 3:56 remaining.
And we're joined now by Coach Jamie Walters, the Osborne Bulldogs. Coach, right after that exchange that I just played, you guys actually went on a 7-0 run. So something like that can go either way. You know, Dayton gets the three, cuts the lead back down to a one-possession game, and then Brady Pollin gets the dunk. And I know you guys, you know, talk some things over, and were able to go on a 7-0 run. But that could go either way. How big was it for you guys maybe to just keep your heads after a big play like that for St. John's Tipton to be able to make that run?
Yeah, that was one thing about our group. You know, we were a bunch of seniors, and, yeah, obviously Dayton had a big shot there as a sophomore, but still, you know, Steele, Darian, Vaughn, you know, Connor, all those kids have been in some big games before, and that's where your senior leadership really showed up there. You know, they were a confident group that, you know, knew what was kind of on the line, and they were confident, and, you know, so it's one of those deals where you kind of, you know, slow down and let's get a basket, and you know, we were able to do that.
When you look at this team this past season, and I know it didn't end the way you wanted it to, but when you look at throughout the season, you know, you really only had a few games where you're challenged, and this was the first one of the season where you really were pushed and had to make some plays there, and you won it in overtime by five. So how much did that help, I guess, to have that experience as you moved on throughout the season?
Oh yeah, it definitely helped, and you know, those games are, you know, they got their confidence from summer and playing in a lot of games and being in those situations before that. And, you know, that's big. And St. John's probably say the same thing. You know, they play in a lot of big games. When it starts in the summer, those kids get better and improve and play in close games over the summer. And then that kind of prepares you for the games during the winter as well.
You know, during these rewinds and things, we've kind of labeled and marked like three different Osborne St. John's Tipton games that have been classics. You've played so many classics against that team. What is it about this matchup that brings out, I guess, the best in both teams in your eyes?
Well, I'd say we just both want to be the best. And, you know, that all starts in the summer and playing and getting better and improving. And, you know, that's the game we kind of look forward to every year because it's, you know, the last several years, it's whoever wins that has been the winner of the league. And so that's important to both of us.
Well, I'm looking forward to the replay here. Hope you enjoy it as well. I mean, when I went back and, you know, got this thing ready, it was big shot after big shot and one of the most exciting regular season games for sure that I've ever done. Hope you enjoy this replay, Coach.
Yeah, thanks a lot for doing that. We appreciate you guys taking the time and effort to do that.
And now we're going to take you back in time, not too far back in time, though. January 14th of this year, Osborne and St. John's Tipton boys basketball will play early third quarter through fourth quarter in the overtime. They come back for the Osborne boys against St. John's Tipton. Enjoy it on Comeback Week on Katy Country 94 on the Sports Ticket.
Got Evan Garman driving into the lane. Garman floater swatted out by Brady Pollen. Has a quick outlet. Perez up ahead to base open. Layup good. Brandon Bates scores it for St. John's Tipton. It's a 7-point lead for the Blue Jays, 35-28. Steele Walters crossover dribble back over to the left side into the corner stole. Long cut off back to Walters. Head fakes on Bates. He got him in the air along two for Steele. Off the backside, it missed him. Dalton Smith there for the rebound. Quick outlet pass up to Bates. He drops his foot and out of bounds. He couldn't quite control the pass from Dalton Smith. And it goes out of bounds. St. John's Tipton fans love the effort of their team here tonight, though, despite a turnover there as the Bulldogs get the ball back, trailing by 7 with 6:13 remaining in the third quarter. Without question, the biggest challenge so far this season for Osborne. Darian Holloway, dribble drive, cut off by Braden Damon, back out top to Garman. Evan puts up a three out top. That one banks off the mark. Rebound tapped by Pollen into the hands of Braden Damon. Damon the other way for St. John's Tipton. Into the corner for Blake Perez. Back out top to Brandon Bates. Bates dribbles left side. In the corner, pull-up jump shot was partially tipped by Garman. The rebound pulled out of there by Steele Walters. Walters pushing underneath the stole. Head fake on Pollen. He waited too long as Brady got a hand on the shot and blocked it out of there. Rebound tipped into the hands of Blake Perez and back to Brandon Bates. 5:26 to play, third quarter, 35-28, St. John's Tipton. Bates has it, dribbling at the circle at half court. Brings it back over to the left side. Into the corner now to Braden Dameron. Dameron. Dribbling right side, picks it up over to Blake Perez, right wing, lob inside for Brady Pollen. Wraparound pass is intended for Schmidt. It goes off the foot of Stoll out of bounds. St. John's Tipton will keep the possession. Dayton Lane's coming back into the game for Osborne for Evan Garman. Turnaround shot in the middle of the lane for Dalton Schmidt. Misses. Nearly a steal, but Von Stoll comes away with it. Pushing the floor Vaughn up on Braden Dameron. He missed the shot, and the rebound goes to Blake Perez. Jose basketball. Brandon Bates with a 450 to play. Stoll gets in front, knocks it loose, but can't complete the steal. It just goes to the backcourt as Vaughn falls to the deck. And Blake Perez has it. Perez on the inside, and the foul fine called on Osborne. Called on, that was on Darian Holloway, and that's his fourth. A huge foul on Osborne, the first team foul on the Bulldogs here in the second half. So 4:36 remaining in the third quarter. Darian Holloway goes to the bench with four fouls. Brandon Befford is back in. Inbound play for Brandon Bates in the near corner. Bounce pass inside. Brady Pollen has a major mismatch on Steele Walters. Had a foul behind called on Brandon Befford trying to get a steal. His first second team foul on Osborne in the second half. Brandon Bates to throw it in. Bates hands it to Pollen. Double team jumps and Vaughn Stoll strips it out of there. Vaughn pushing the floor. Cut off by Perez. And Brady Pollen swats the shot and it goes right off the shoulder of Ryan Brown, who's cheerleading down there for Osborne. So hopefully that didn't hurt too bad. That was a pretty hefty swat that time from Pollen, but Blake Perez was called on a block foul before the block shot at the second on Blake. And Stoll was in the act of shooting, as we have mentioned on the block, as two free throws come up for Vaughn. First one rattles around and out. Second free throw upcoming for Vaughn Stoll. That one spins around and in. 5 points now for Stoll. The lead is down to 6 again at 35-29. St. John's Tipton. Blue Jay basketball. Brandon Bates has it. Oh, he had it stripped from behind and a steal for Vaughn Stoll again. Stoll going to take it all the way. Blocked from behind. No, they call a foul on Brandon Bates. Brandon gets called for his second personal. Free throws will be coming up for Vaughn Stoll, but first we have a timeout by Lance Bergman and the Blue Jays. Welcome back on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. 4:11 remaining in the third quarter, 35-29. Free throws coming up for Vaughn Stoll, and that one spins around and goes in. 6 points now for Stoll, 35-30 with Stoll. 4:11 remaining here in the third again as Osborne trying to cut back into this lead. Second free throw for Stoll on the way, and that one's not at the net. After missing his first one, he's made three in a row since then, and down to a four-point Blue Jay lead, 35-31. Darian Holloway get on the bench right now with four fouls for Osborne. Brandon Bates pushes it up the floor and nearly had it knocked out the bottom. It goes out of bounds off of Theo Walters, and the Blue Jays will keep the possession. St. John's Pittman with the basketball, leading by four. Not a good look there for Brandon Bates trying to inbound. He threw it, trying to throw it across the court. It's stolen by Steele Walters. Walters to the hoop. Left-handed layup missed. On the rebound, a tie-up. Three different players going for it. Two white jerseys, one maroon jersey. On the alternating arrow, St. John's Pittman will get the basketball. So the Blue Jays with the ball. Braden Perez was in for center, but then checks right back out. Brady Pollin, Jaden Rosebaugh, Dalton Schmidt, Brandon Bates, and Braden Dameron, the lineup on the floor right now for St. John's Pittman. Bates brings it across the timeline. Over to the right side wing, it goes to Brady Pollin. Brady, dribble drive baseline, pull-up jump shot on Steele Walters, and he gets it to go in. Brady Pollin with six in the quarter, 16 in the game, and St. John's Pippen back up by six, 37-31. Bulldog basketball, Steele Walters hesitates, dribbles, kicks into the corner, open three for Vaughn Stoll, nothing but net for Auburn. Vaughn Stoll with his first three-pointer of the game, his 14th of the season, the lead is cut in half at 37-34, St. John's Tipton. And coming up the floor, Dayton Lance knocks the ball out of bounds here on the near sideline against Dameron. It stays right here with St. John's Tipton with 3:21 remaining in the third and a 37-34 lead for the Blue Jays. Brandon Bates to throw it in near sideline. Brady Pollin's wide open on the left wing. Head fakes on a three. Behind the back of the dribble, gets it back over to Braden Dameron. Rosebaugh has it now, puts up a shot. Actually, I don't know if that might have been a pass inside to Schmidt. If it wasn't, it was a good pass in and up in. If it was a shot attempt, because Dalton catches it and plays it right up and in. 5-point lead for the Blue Jays. It's 39-34. Steele Walters the other way for Osborne. Driving on base, puts up a floater that was partially tipped by Brady Pollin. And here come the Blue Jays the other way after the rebound. Steele Walters said he was fouled on the arm. Nothing was called. They got to get back and play defense. Bates on the dribble drive, pulls it back out of the left wing. Picks up a dribble back out top to Rosebaugh, back to Bates. On the left side, a lob pass inside to Brady Pollin. Stoll falls down, up on Goheen, shot missed, but a foul called on Connor Goheen. That's the first on Connor in the 13th foul. Brady Pollin headed back to the free throw line for St. John's Pittman. Blue Jays with a 39-34 lead. 2:37 remaining in this third quarter. Free throw coming up for Brady Pollin, and it's nothing but net. Brady with 7 points in the quarter, now 17 in the game. 40-34, St. John's Tipton. Second free throw coming up here for Brady Pollin. Bounces off the mark, and a rebound of Vaughn Stoll. Bulldogs coming the other way. Stoll fell down and then ended up losing the ball, trying to pass it into the backcourt. It's stolen away by Jaden Rosebaugh. So I'll turn over the game for Osborne. Out top, Brady Pollin has head fake. Ball's knocked out by Steele Walters, but Pollin comes back away with it. Dameron now on the right side. Dribble drive on Goheen. Back over to Bates. Bates spinning, driving, floater on the way. That missed everything. Schmidt tries to save the rebound. It goes off the leg of Pollin. Goheen has it for a second. Tipped out by Pollin. Bates has it near side. St. John's Tipton moves up keeping it. Bates, left side, Dameron for three. High Arthur, front with it. This rebound goes to Dayton Lance, and Dameron might have got away with a foul on that one. Coming the other way, Vaughn Stoll wide open, three left wing. Count it for Osborne. Vaughn Stoll cuts the lead in half again. It's 40-37, and it's a 1:45 mark in the third quarter. A full timeout called by Jamie Walters. St. John's Pittman with a three-point lead, and we're back on Katy Country 94. 1:45 remaining in the third quarter. A big three-pointer from Vaughn Stoll has Osborne back within three at 40-37. As the Blue Jays had the ball back, the ball knocked out of bounds on the far sideline by Stoll. St. John's Pittman basketball. Schmidt checks out. Back in is Rosebaugh for the Blue Jays. Inbound pass into the backcourt goes to Blake Perez. Started by Beffert. Perez spinning off of Beffert. Dribble drive looking into the corner. The ball is tipped. Rosebaugh has it for St. John's Pittman. Back out to Brandon Bates. Bates dribbles. Kicks into the corner to Dameron. Three-pointer for Braden. High Archer. Bouncing around and out. Rebound goes to Connor Goheen. Bulldogs pushing the floor. Vaughn Stoll, Brandon Beffert, left wing, kicks it over to the right side. Dayton Lance, open three for the tie. It bounces no good. And a rebound to Brady Pollin in the middle of the lane. Brady pushing the floor. Looking to take it all the way on Steele Walters. Steele tips it away from him. Big time play there by Steele Walters. Osborne coming the other way. Walters drives, flips the two defenders, blocked from behind. Could have been goaltending if it was not called. Rebound Osborne inside to Goheen. Turnaround shot good for the Bulldogs. 5 points now for Connor Goheen as the lead is down to one for St. John's Pippen, 40-39. Blue Jay basketball, 48 seconds remaining in the third quarter. Brandon Bates out top of the key. Dribble drive into the lane. Head fake on Goheen. Shot missed. And a rebound to Vaughn Stoll as it was left wall short. Stoll up ahead. Nice play by Jaden Rosebaugh stepping in front and stealing it away. Two turnovers in this third quarter. 13 in the game for Osborne. 30 seconds remaining in the third and a one-point Blue Jay lead. Blake Perez at the elbow. Nice take by Rosebaugh on the layup. Good with the left hand. Jaden with a quick step into the lane and he scores it for the Blue Jays. They lead by 3, 42 to 39. 10 seconds remaining, third quarter. Steele Walters across half court. A screen from Goheen. 3, top of the key for the tie. Nothing but net for Steele Walters. 2 seconds remaining. The ball knocked out of bounds from behind by Vaughn Stoll and Osborne. And we're headed to the fourth quarter. A 42-42 tie between Osborne and St. John Tipton. We're back for the final frame on Kitty Country 94. One quarter remaining here on Kitty Country 94 from St. John's Catholic High School in Beloit. Offered and St. John's Tipton knotted up at 42 apiece after a three-pointer from Steele Walters at the end of that third quarter. We're on basketball to start the fourth. Darian Holloway still on the bench to start quarter number four with four fouls. Steele Walters crosses over, drives to the lane. A foul called out top well before the shot by Steele Walters. He drove in and made a layup, but foul out top on St. John's Tipton, the 14th foul on the Blue Jays. And it's called on Blake Perez, his third. Bulldogs keeping the possession of the inbound play for Brandon Beffert. Beffert finding Walters right side, head fakes on a three, dribble drive, splits two defenders, running layup miss. Rebound Blake Perez for St. John's Tipton. Blue Jay basketball. Braden Dameron behind the back of the dribble, gets away from a couple defenders, head fakes on a three, top of the key. Blake Perez has it now. Wild pass inside to Schmidt. Lance tried to steal it from behind and forced the tie up. The alternating arrow will keep it right here with St. John's Tipton. Blue Jays keep it. Inbound play coming for St. John's Tipton. Dameron to Schmidt. Perez. Blake to Braden. Near side to Braden Dameron. Real close to the out-of-bounds line. Stays in. Braden Perez spinning at the elbow. Back to Dameron. Braden drives it to the lane. Floater on the lane. Rolling in to Braden Dameron. 6 points down for Dameron. And St. John's Tipton regains the lead by 2. 44-42. Steele Walters coming the other way. St. John's Tipton sits back in a half-court man-to-man defense. Give it to Strink and Goheen out top. Hesitation, driving into the lane, kicks the far corner. Three for Beffert for the lead. It hits front rim and miss. Rebound goes into the lap of Blake Perez. Eichmann's in, back over to Blake Perez. Blue Jay basketball, and a double dribble fell on Blake Perez in the backcourt. Lance Bergman is saying that Brady Damon needs to go get the ball because there's no other, you know, the normal point guard is Brandon Bates, who's not out on the floor right now, and Braden didn't realize that. A turnover there for St. John's Tipton is the 17th of the game, and Brandon Bates is going to come back into the game for Jared Eichmann. Also, Jaden Rosebaugh will check in for St. John's Tipton. Coming in for Blake Perez. 6:56 remaining in the game. St. John's Tipton up 2, 44-42. Osborne basketball, the inbound play for Brandon Beffert. Beffert finds Goheen open on the left elbow for the easy layup. Connor Goheen has 7 points, and we're not back up at 44 apiece. Blue Jay basketball, Brandon Bates coming out of the way. Has it left side wing. Guarded by Stoll. Bates pressured by Dayton Lance. And Lance coming in from behind gets called for a foul. He has three in the first half. That's his fourth foul of the game now. 14 fouls called on Osborne in this second half. Blue Jays and the Bulldogs tied at 44. Substitution Brady Pollen back in for Dalton Schmidt. Schmidt let Goheen free on that inbound play. He's being coached right now by Lance Bergman about it. Three-pointer on the left side. Dameron off the inbound and carries it for St. John Tipton. The Blue Jays back up 47-44. Stoll gets into the corner. Garmin has it now. Back over to Brandon Beffert. Beffert guarded by Dameron, heavily out top. Gets it over to Steele Walters. It's into the volleyball spike line. Now dribbling out top, guarded by Brandon Bates. Walters going one-on-one with Bates. Steps back, thought about the three. Drives instead, kicks underneath to Goheen. Open layup good. The assist from Steele Walters and Connor Goheen. Now has 9 points. It's down to a one-point lead, 47-46. Bates near side. Dameron hesitates on the head fake. Dribble drive into the lane. Scoop layup missing, but a foul on Osborne. 5:58 to play in the game. Bulldog foul, the 15th foul. Braden Dameron to the free throw line. He's 1-2 in the game so far. That foul was called on Brandon Beffert, his second personal. Dameron at the charity stripe for St. John's Tipton. First one on the way. And it's a little bit too strong. 47-46. St. John's Tipton with a one-point lead. Second free throw coming up for Braden Dameron. And that one is spinning around and out. Vaughn Stoll gets the rebound. Hold on basketball, the one-point deficit, 5:53 to play in the ballgame. Steele Walker setting up the half-court offense for Osborne. Put it out top by Brandon Bates. Walters with the screen from Goheen. Faith comes underneath it and stays on Walters. Darian Holloway back in with his fourth foul for Osmond. Holloway top of the key, left side to Steele. Walters, he fires up a three, and it rattles around and out. Boy, that was almost in there for Steele. He kind of threw it up there and it missed. Rebound goes to Jaden Rosebaugh for St. John's Tipton. Blue Jay basketball, crossover to the high face. Brandon has with the right wing. They left him open. Three. Nothing but that for Brandon Tate. And he carries another one for the Blue Jays. He has 14, and that's 50-46. Unbelievable. The defense stepped off of base on that three there. Steele Walters steps into a three. Right side wing for the answer. It bounces no good. Jaden Rosebaugh rebounds to St. John's Tipton. And it's put out with the Brandon Tate. Tate pushing the floor for the Blue Jays. Guarded by Vaughn Stoll. Crosses over on the dribble. Picks it up. Pressure from Stoll, right side wing. Braden Perez has it now. Braden, nice feed, bounce pass inside to Brady Pollen. Looking to go up with it. Strong, and Brady banks it in. 19 for Brady Pollen, 52-46 in favor of the Blue Jays. Shield offers on the dribble drive, and a foul called over there in the corner before the shot attempt here. Foul called on Brandon Bates, that's his third. 15 foul on St. John's Tipton. The inbound play for Darian Holloway. Holloway looking to get it in. Finds Steele Walters right side. Walters got it by Brandon Bates again. Out top, Dayton Lance. Open three, top of the key. Nothing but the bottom for Dayton Lance. He stepped up big against Thunder Ridge. He has his first three of this game. 52-49. St. John's Tipton's lead is down to three again. Holloway drive, stuffing it home on the right wing line. Brady Pollen with 21. 54-49, Blue Jays with 3:56 remaining, and Pollen on the inside trying to help out defensively. I think this foul might be coming low on Brandon Bates, who is shook up a little bit, but appears to be okay. Steele Walters to the free throw line for two shots, and he fouled by Bates, his fourth foul. An exciting game tonight. Steele Walters' first free throw, nothing but net. He has 14 now, 54-50. Bates jumps out with his fourth foul. Back in is Braden Dameron for St. John's Tipton. So a lot of time left in this one. 3:53 remaining. Second free throw coming up for Steele Walters. Steele's second one is smooth. The timeout called by Jamie Walters and Osborne. 54-51, 3:53 remaining in the game. Welcome back here on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. St. John's Tipton leading over Osborne 54-51. It's been an exciting game here tonight. At stake for Osborne, there's a pretty long winning streak as far as regular season games are concerned. They lost a regular season game on January 9th of 2018. It was right here in Beloit. An inbound pass goes off of the leg of Braden Perez and out of bounds for St. John's Tipton. Bulldogs have taken a timeout after their two free throws from Steele Walters. And Osborne gets it back on the turnover by the Blue Jays. Darian Holloway in for Vaughn Stoll. Stoll on the near side wing, dribbling back out. Free throw line now. Left side it goes to Steele Walters. A deep three for Steele for the tie. Nothing but net again. Steele Walters has tied this one up at 54 apiece. Back and forth we go as the Bulldogs are all the way back to the tie. On the right side, Braden Dameron. The screen out top. The ball pops loose. Here comes Darian Holloway the other way for Osborne. Open layup good. The Bulldogs reclaim the lead. 10 points down for Darian Holloway. Osborne up 2:56-54. Bulldogs turning up the pressure defensively. A timeout called by Lance Bergman. 3:17 remaining in the ballgame, and Osborne has taken a two-point lead, 56-54. St. John's Tipton had a lead of five at 54-49 at one point, and Osborne has scored the last 7 points to take a 56-54 lead as the Blue Jays have it back out of their 32nd timeout. 3:15 remaining in the contest, two-point lead for Osborne. Feet inside, Braden Perez, the ball hits back and get on go ahead and scoring. Belton ties the game up at 56 apiece. 10 points for Schmidt, the second time this year he's been in double figures. On Stoll with 3 minutes to play, crossover dribble kick, left side Steele Walters. Steele, another one from the left side wing, nothing but the bottom, his sixth three-pointer of the game, and Walters gives the Bulldogs a 59-56 lead. Out top, this is Brandon Bates with it for St. John's Tipton. Near side to Blake Perez. Blake taking a couple dribbles here on the left side wing. Gets a screen from Rosebaugh. Gets another one coming the other way. Crossover dribble. Blocks it for a second. The ball stripped out. Last touch by Darian Holloway. It goes out of bounds. Brady Pollen checking back into the game for the Blue Jays for Jaden Rosebaugh. 2:32 to play in the game. Osborne up 59-56. Inbound play for Braden Dameron. Back into the corner. Dameron, dribble drive baseline, puts up a shot blocked by Gohan. Connor gets the rebound up ahead. Javon Stoll. Stoll looking to take it away. Blocked for the high by Brayden Perez. Then it's off of Stoll out of bounds. Blake Perez actually got the block that time. And Stoll the last to touch it as the Blue Jays will get the possession back. Blue Jay basketball on the drive. Baseline, Brandon Bates. Photo good from the right side. 16 points now for Brandon Bates. And it's a one-point Osborne lead, 59-58. 2 minutes to play in the contest. Neil Walters across the timeline. Dribble drive into the lane, and he's fouled hard by Blake Perez, going in with a shot attempt. Steele will go to the free throw line for 2 attempts. Hasn't been a particularly great shooting night for Steele Walters as far as percentage-wise, but he's come up with big three after big three here in this fourth quarter, and he has a couple free throws coming up this time. Foul on Blake Perez. It's his fourth. 17th foul. Steele knocks the first free throw down. 60-58. Bulldogs with the advantage. Second one for Walters is up and good. 61-58, Osmond with the advantage. And the Blue Jays have the basketball back. This is Brandon Bates dribbling on the left side wing. Blake Perez with it now. Dribble drive into the lane, cut off by Lance. Speeds underneath to Schmidt. Can't get the spin on the layup. Rebound snapped out by Collin, and then Dayton Lance traveled when he caught it. Tough play there. Dayton Lance just barely losing his scissor foot there at the end of that one. The turnover for Osmond gives it back to St. John's Tipton. Bulldogs with a three-point lead. The inbound play for Brandon Bates. Brandon looking out, floats one out toward the top. The volleyball spike line, top of the key for Braden Dameron. Back to Bates. The screen from Paulin picks up his dribble in a pretty tough spot there. Good pressure defense from Vaughn Stoll. And back over to Dameron. Bates on the right side wing now. Dribble back out top. On the left side, cut off by Lance. Spires looking baseline, and it's tipped and stolen out of there by Goheen. Turnover for St. John's Tipton with a minute 15 remaining and a three-point Osborne lead. Stoll brings it across the timeline. Vaughn pressured out here by Brady Paulin. Hesitates, dribble drive into the lane. Stoll looks underneath. Goheen, layup miss. Rebound Braden Bates. Bates pulls it out of there for St. John's Tipton. Coming the other way for the Blue Jays. Bates has it on the left side. Braden Dameron is wide open here on the near side. And Brandon didn't see him quick enough. He has it in the near corner of Dameron now. The screen from Schmidt. Dalton has it back to Dameron. Dameron gets a screen, three on the way for the tie. He spins it from the right side. Braden Dameron ties the game at 61, and a quick timeout called by Lance Bergman with 38 and a half seconds remaining in this one. A 61-61 tie from Kitty Country 94. Like a heavyweight fight, these two teams going blow for blow here in the final minute of this contest with 38 and a half seconds left. Osborne and St. John's Tipton knotted up at 61 apiece. The Blue Jays and Bulldogs are both undefeated in the league at 3-0. And Osborne has the basketball out of the Blue Jays timeout after an 8-3 by Braden Dameron to tie this game up. 61-61 the score. Chance of defense you hear from the St. John's Tipton fans. Steele Walters across the timeline. You would think Osborne will probably try to hold for the final shot here. And a 61-61 tie down to 22 seconds left. Vaughn Stoll has it right side wing. Over to Steele Walters on the left side. He's got it out there by Blake Perez. 13 and a half seconds left. Steele has it right side wing, 10 seconds. Perez under the fence. They're counting on Steele Walters. Out of 6 seconds. Steele on the dribble drive. Kicks left side. Darian Holloway, open three. Bounces off the mark. Cullen the rebound. Up ahead. Stolen by Stoll. Shot for the win. Bounces no good. And that's the end of regulation as we head into overtime with a 61-61 tie here in Beloit at St. John's Catholic High School. Two looks for Osborne that were fairly open that fall short. And we're headed to OT here in Beloit. Overtime period now as the Blue Jays and Bulldogs tied up at 61 after the first four quarters of this game. Extra time to decide this one here in Beloit. Brady Paulin and Connor Goheen at the center of the floor to tip this one off. In overtime, and it's won by St. John's Tipton. Brandon Bates still drive to the hoop. Layup missed. Rebound Dalton Smith. Put back no good, but a foul on Osborne. We'll send Smith to the foot. Wait a second. They called a foul on St. John's Tipton on the rebound, apparently. It just wasn't a foul. I was being blocked by the fans to see the official call there, but either way, it's going to go back to Osborne on a turnover that time. Darian Holloway, a three from the left side, spins around and out. Dayton Lance has a rebound. Oh, a foul called on St. John's Tipton as Lance went down to the floor. Lance Bergman not quite agreeing with the call that time. Team foul number 8 in the second half, and that's a 1-1 coming up now for Osborne. Then Dayton Lance will go to the charity stripe. Foul was called on Dalton Smith in his second. Leading the way for St. John's Tipton tonight, 21 points for Brady Paulin. Dayton Lance at the free throw line for the 1-1. Mint rebound goes to Brady Paulin. Steele Walters has a game-high 24 for Osborne. Bulldogs and Blue Jays tied at 61, 3:35 in the overtime. Braden Dameron head fakes on a three, steps back in the near corner, back to the elbow on the right side to Dalton Schmidt. Lob pass looking inside to Paul, and not a real good pass. Kind of slow advised, and then on the baseline, they call a foul on Brady Collin. Actually, they just said that Brady was out of bounds. No foul that time, so wipe that one off there for Brady. He kind of pointed like he was calling a foul. Dribble drive into the lane. Stole to Goheen at the elbow. Lance in the near corner to Vaughn Stoll. Cut off by Brandon Bates. Stoll. Pass right side to Darian Holloway. Holloway. Setting it up offensively on the dribble drive. Kicks out to Steele Walters. Drives into the lane. Runner spinning around and out. Rebound Dalton Schmidt for St. John's Tipton. Blue Jay basketball. Brandon Bates brings it across the timeline. We've played a minute and 15 seconds in this overtime period. Nobody's scored yet. Bates has it, crosses over, pulls it back out on the wing, feeds it to Brady Paulin, spins in the lane, blocked by Connor Goheen, and the rebound pulled down by Darian Holloway. Holloway out top to Vaughn Stoll, head fake, hesitation, trying to feed underneath, reverse layup, good for Connor Goheen. And Goheen gives Osborne a two-point lead, 63-61 here in overtime. Dameron to Paulin, and Paulin was trying to get it right back to Dameron, who was sliding back into the lane, a little quick give-and-go action there, and Dameron kind of fell across the lane, and the ball was thrown out of bounds. Three turnovers in this overtime period for St. John's Tipton, and Jaden Rosebaugh checking back in for Dalton Schmidt. As the Bulldogs have it back with a two-point lead, 63-61, 2:05 remaining in the contest. Vaughn Stoll, guarded by Brandon Bates. Stoll brings it across the timeline. Screen from Goheen. Steps back to the right side wing to Steele Walters. He gets a screen from Goheen. Blake Perez comes underneath it. Walters driving into the lane. Missed the shot, but a foul will send Steele to the free throw line for two attempts. 19th foul called on the Blue Jays. And this one is called on Rosebaugh, his first. Lance Bergman is calling a timeout for St. John's Tipton. 63-61, 1:47 remaining in overtime. Dusty Dennis back with you on Kitty Country 94. KittyCountry94.com. Steele Walters headed to the free throw line for Osborne here. As he leads the Bulldogs with 24 points, 6 or 7 from the line in the game. This first free throw spins around and out. The two-point lead for Osborne, 63-61, with a minute 47 remaining in the overtime here tonight in Boyd. Second free throw going up for Steele for a three-point lead, and it spins around and in this time. 25 points for Steele. He's 2 points off of his career high as Osborne leads 64-61. Walters, the senior, has really stepped up big when Osborne needed him. He had 11 of his 25 points in the fourth quarter. Brady Collin drives into the lane, runner's way off. He got his own rebound, missed the putback, got his own rebound again, missed the putback again, missed another putback, throws by the rebound, foul call before the shot for St. John's Tipton. Collin had three opportunities there that none of them went as the Blue Jays had the possession. That foul was on Darian Holloway, who just fouled out of the game here in overtime. That's 10 points. And apparently, they just called a technical foul on, I don't know, Holloway coming to the bench or if it was on the bench or where it came from, but that's a very costly technical foul on Austin. Brandon Bates goes to the free throw line. 127 and OT. Bates knocks down to the free throw. 17 now for the senior Brandon Bates, 64-62 the score. Osborne still winning it by two. The second technical free throw for Bates is off the mark. We have an inbound play. That was just a 16 foul back there on Osborne. And St. John's Tipton has an inbound play, trailing by two, 64-62. Bates in for Braden Dameron. 1:24 to play in overtime. Dameron on the near side hands it off to Blake Perez. Perez, back to Dameron on the right wing. Braden back out top, overplay by Stoll. Bates, pull-up jump shot, left elbow, partially tipped by Goheen. The rebound goes to Steele Walters for Osborne. And we have a foul called on St. John's Tipton. I believe Jaden Rose by a little bit too close for Walters on the defense. Second on Rosebaugh, 10th off, two free throws going up for Steele Walters. 26 points now for Steele Walters. He makes his first free throw and gives Osborne a three-point lead, 65-62. If he makes this free throw, he would tie his career high in scoring, 27. And he's got 27 tonight. He had 27 against Victoria back on December 17th. Bulldogs lead by 4, 66-62. St. John's Tipton basketball with 1:03 to play. Brady Collin has it on the right side. Over to the near side wing, it goes to Brandon Bates. Bates three, top of the key. Spinning around and out. Rebound is on the deck, and Goheen has it. And actually a tie-up call, and St. John's Tipton will get the possession. DJ is trying to hang on and get a good look here on this possession. 52.9 on the clock. They trail by four. And get back into this one. Inbound to Schmidt. Dameron back over to Perez. Blake drives into the lane. Hesitation on the near side. Lob pass inside to Schmidt. Layup good. He assists from Blake Perez. 12 points now for Dalton Schmidt. The lead is back down to two. It's 66-64. Bulldog basketball. Steele Walters has it. He just gets across that court. I have to think about fouling here at this point. Just 30 seconds left. Steele Walters is going to keep the ball in his hands right now. He's not giving it up. So you're going to have to foul him, whether you want to or not. Now Blake Perez is coming out. Dalton Schmidt is there. Looking over for Lance. Lance has it. And a timeout called by Jamie Walters and Osborne. 17 and a half seconds remaining. A 66-64 lead for Osborne. And we'll take the timeout as well. Osborne has outscored St. John's 5-3 here in this overtime period. Bulldogs lead 66-64 in overtime. You know, last time Osborne lost in a regular season game was back on January 9th of 2018 right here in Beloit against St. John's Tipton in a game that went to double overtime. Bound play coming to Ron Stoll. Stoll looking to throw it in. Steele got open, and they get it into the backcourt to Walters. Dameron needs to foul him. I don't know what they're doing. Ron Stoll has it back. Back over to Steele. 12 seconds to play. Walters brings it across half court, letting him go. And finally, Dameron didn't want to get called for the foul, but St. John's Tipton fans thought Steele double dribble, but they called Braden for a foul from behind. Look, either way, you need the foul right there. There's 8 seconds left. So if you didn't get the double dribble that you might have wanted, it took way too long to foul in that situation. Steele Walters at the free throw line for Osborne. First one on the way and good. And he's pretty high, 28 for Steele Walters here tonight as the Bulldogs lead 67-64. Lance Bergen will call a timeout here to maybe try to ice Steele. But Walters has been money when it's scouted for Osborne. 67-64, Osborne to the lead. This is really the one that could ice this game for Steele Walters. Yes, that's why Lance Bergman is trying to ice Steele at the charity shot. Free throw for Walters on the way. And it hit front rim and missed. Brady following the rebound. Here come the Blue Jays. Brandon Bates across the timeline. 5 seconds to play. That is stripped away by Bedford. A steal for Ron Stoll. 2.5 seconds remaining. St. John's Tipton felt like it was a foul, but it was not called. The ball was stripped away by Bedford. Stoll gets the steal. And the Bulldogs have the basketball. Ron Stoll to the free throw line with 2.5 seconds remaining. And a chance to wrap this one up. Brandon Bates got called for the foul. That was his fifth. So he is fouled out of the game with 2.4 on the clock here in overtime. And Bates finishes the game with 17 points for St. John's Tipton. Ron Stoll at the free throw line with 2-shot opportunity here. And this one can't ice it for Osborne. Free throw for Stoll, and he buries it. That should all but do it. Ron Stoll with 14 points now for the Bulldogs, 68-64. And it looks like Osborne's going to escape with the victory here tonight. St. John's Tipton gave them absolutely everything they wanted. Second free throw for Vaughn on the way, and that puts it at a 5-point lead. Stoll has 15. Inbound play is thrown away. Dayton Lance tips it, saves it in to Steele Walters, and the clock will run out. Osborne escapes, winning it 69-64 over St. John's Tipton. The Blue Jays, again, giving Osborne everything they wanted, but Osborne ends up with the victory, moving to 7-0 overall and 4-0 in the Northern Plains League. The first test this season for Osborne, and they pass it. But barely. Bulldogs win at 69-64 in overtime.
Osborne would go on to pass all of their other regular season tests as well. There weren't a lot of them, but they did pick up another 1-point win over St. John's Tipton in the semifinals of the Northern Plains League tournament on January 23rd, 59-58, just 9 days after this overtime classic and comeback win. Osborne would finish the regular season with a record of 18-0 in the first round bye in the regional tournament in Class 1A, but they would end up falling in the semifinals to Logan there in Mankato at Rock Hills High School to finish the season with a record of 19-1. If you would like a full audio copy of this classic comeback win for the Osborne Bulldogs over the St. John's Tipton Blue Jays, you can give us a call at the station at 545-3220. We'll give you all the details on how you can get a copy, purchase that, or you can get any other copies of our games in the archives as well. Big thanks to everybody for tuning in for Comeback Week on the Sports Ticket and this game today on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.